Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, and welcome everybody. So this week's episode of Cop End, Fracas. There's going to be a common theme in this pod, as you guessed from the intro music. It's going to be based on the number four. That's right, I feel like the count from Sesame Street. One, two, three, four. Four goals Liverpool scored. And to discuss all this, I am your host, Chris, and I'm joined by Fahi and Peter. Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good. Knock at the door number four. You know, you called me to jump on. I was like, cool, I'll jump on. Let's discuss what happened on Saturday. Let's talk about our bitches from North London. But yeah, I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. A little bit busy with work, but hopefully, you know, with Christmas coming around the corner, we'll die a little bit down. And yeah, have a bit more free time to focus on other...
You working players. Hard for that Christmas bonus?
Bro, got to, man. You know?
You see how everyone ups their work middle of November till the end of the year?
You know what I mean? Yeah, Chris needs new shoes, baby. You know what I mean?
Bro, gotta work hard for that money. Just so they're front of mind of the directors and all that stuff. Like, yeah, I've been grafting this year. Remember this report I made?
Oh. Well, I've timed it really well because I'm working on this like really big project towards the end of the year. I'm like, this deserves all of the bonus money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. This is classic corporate office tactics. Nasty.
Yeah, for more on that, tune into Grindstone Fracas that will be coming soon. Peter, how you doing, brother?
Yeah, I'm lovely, man. I'm good, man. Just had to quickly crash it on them boys, them YGs, you know. Man were telling me about what like Lacazette, Smith Rowe, Saka. Oh. I said in the Patreon, like Saka, Smith, good boys. Like man likes them guys, isn't it? Like good guys, but come on, man. We're talking about the OGs here. We're talking about, like, you know what I'm saying, Premier League all-timers. Like, come on, man. I had to crash on them quickly, you know. Send you back home with nothing, man.
Exactly, man. The criminal disrespect that was going on towards one of the best front threes, not only in the Premier League, but in world football, was unbelievable. Yeah. It reached, you know, this is what happens when Arsenal win a few games against meaty teams. The confidence levels go up.
I hate it had to be you, but... No, I love it. It had to be like Mariah says, you like it, I love it, man. Like, come on, man. The thing is, they were getting like just a bit, you know, man was just starting to see a bit combined teams. I was starting to
They're getting a bit zesty, man.
Yeah, I'm starting to see a bit too much dip on your chip. You know what I'm saying?
So, wow, that hot marinade. They were up in the spice of it.
It's cool, man.
We'll see Saturday, cool, big boy.
It's cool. Like man seeing, what did they say? They said, I don't really mind that result. I learned a lot from it. Oh, yeah. All right, mate. All right, cool.
I was hearing terminologies like free hit. Like, no. There's no such thing as a free hit at the highest levels of football where you want to reach. What do you think you are, Norwich? Good Lord. But of course, today's pod is presented by Touchline Media Group. And there is a whole host of content coming to you live and for free. This week, of course, you've got every single main pod, Courtside Frackers, Pitside Frackers as well. But of course, you can join the guys from Mugger and Chessy Hour on Thursday at 8 p.m. I think 8 p.m.
I think 7 or 8 p.m.
Ooh, early kickoff.
It might be early kickoff, 7 p.m. I think.
Early kickoff, the adjusting to the Europa League times. I respect it. As Thursday nights are Europa nights, as BT like to advertise, which is the weirdest thing ever. you can see it's going to be an all-star cast, really, of Mugger representatives and Chessy representatives going at it on the fabled fight card. So you do tune into that at 7 p.m. exclusively on YouTube. Check out the respective Twitter accounts and, of course, the Touchline Fracas Twitter account for when that link drops on Thursday. But, of course, this is a Liverpool focused podcast. And if you want a little bit more from us as well, then do head over to the Patreon page. The Patreon page where it is the best place to get that premium LFC content from us here at Copper and Fracas. So that is www.patreon.com/Copper and Fracas. And again, from just £3 a month, you get a guaranteed 3 shows per week. Free. 3 shows per week. And of course, with the Christmas holiday coming up, we're going to be bored. We're going to be wanting to get away from family. You know, oh, get away from me, cousin Ben Tood. I don't want to talk to you, man. I want to record. No, I don't want to talk about Liverpool. I want to talk about January transfer windows. This is one of the... If you want to talk to me, subscribe to the Patreon page, cousin Ben Tood. Okay? And if you also want to talk to us and you want to be a proud Copper and Patreon, you want to have that Copper and Patreon on your chest, then do head over to www.patreon.com/Copper and Fracas today. But we are here to talk about Liverpool 4, Arsenal 0. And Fahy, I'm going to come to you first because me and Peter did the post-match on Saturday, which was a lot of fun. You had the best of both worlds, really, because you had... I know you didn't watch the game live at the time, but you were able to post your fable, the classic, the streets will never forget, Arsenal lost meme, and then have the full enjoyment of watching the 90 minutes at 11 o'clock at night. Talk me through your contrasting emotions from that process.
1:30 at night, by the way. I stayed up till 3:30 watching that game.
Look at the dedication.
Dedication. And, you
know, this man stayed up until 3:30 in the morning. That's worth at least a £3 a month Patreon subscription.
Fam, listen, I can't jump on a podcast talking about football when I'm not watching the game. That's ridiculous. So you know what? I'm gonna stay up and I'm gonna watch the games. Otherwise, I may as well not podcast. What's the point? So, yeah, I missed the game because of marital duties. You know, it is what it is. But 1:30 in the morning, I came home and I whacked it on. I didn't look at the text messages. I didn't look at the group chat. I saw about 500 plus messages. I knew we won, but I didn't see what happened. Like, I didn't know when people scored. So it was a surprise to me, right? But, yeah, what was the question? Sorry.
I've never really had that experience of having the joy of the victory. But then watching the game later on?
Yeah. I mean, it was a sigh of relief because, you know, like, this season, every game that I've missed, we've not won for some reason. And, you know, like, that football superstition stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you get randomly superstitious, like, rah, every time we've not won, I've been sitting on the left side of the sofa. This time, I'm going to sit on the right side. So, yeah, we're definitely going to win. And I've been thinking the whole time, like, right, every single game I've missed, we've not won. What if it happens again? So, yeah, when I shut my phone, I saw 4-0. I was like, thank God, man. I can relax, watch it nice. And yeah, it was a nice watch, man. Nothing too heavy. It was a light meal. It was like an appetizer.
Something light.
Honestly, it's like going to the cafe for a quick bite. That's what it was. There was nothing more to it.
We should do a separate pod on that Patreon one, just based on football superstitions, because I watch it same place every time, same volume, same T-shirt.
Fan.
You know, I don't know whether it's the Asian in me combined with, you know, the superstition of football, but it's those two things that combine together that make me some form of, like, you know, superstitious totem pole whenever the games are on. So,
yo, I used to be really bad as a kid, man. I used to be mad superstitious. Like, oh, I can't be laying down whilst I'm watching the game. I've got to be sat here. I've got to be wearing this. It was just ridiculous. Because end of the day, we weren't winning anything anyway. So, yeah, it took long enough for me to realise. I don't know about Peter. Has he ever been superstitious?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. There was a period when, like, I think it might have been under Rodgers. I think I told you about this fire he went. Like, every time I used to watch us live, we used to lose. All the time, we used to lose. So I was like, yeah, okay, cool. It's me. It's 100% me. I'm going to stop watching us live, and then, like, we're going to get better. And I just realised, we're this shit. We're this shit. We're just not a good team. Maybe I just stopped that, so yeah.
Yeah, we're playing three at the back for a reason. There's, you know...
Oh God, don't remind me.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. There's better times that we can experience. I want to talk about the first kind of like 25 minutes of the game, because I think it's a really interesting way that we approach it. Big game at Anfield, it's under the lights. It's against, decent opposition. And we don't go hell for leather in terms of, 100 miles an hour, manically pressing for the ball and searching for a goal within the first 10, 15 minutes of the game. We kind of have this like really laid back approach where we just want to control it and have it on a bit more strings. Do you think that was a conscious decision for the coaching staff to do that after the international break, considering how games have gone? Or do you think it's something that we've been doing a little bit more naturally recently?
No, I don't think that is a conscious decision. I think a feature of Liverpool's play, especially this season, at the first 20 minutes, we normally go gung-ho. Like, we normally, like, especially at Anfield as well, big games, it's like, can you handle the first 20 minutes? Like, you know what I'm saying? Especially, like, against Chelsea, against Man City, like, we started off quite well. Chelsea more so. Like, we'll just go press them, you know what I'm saying? Create a lot of chances. Milan as well, another example. The first 20 minutes of Milan, crazy, ridiculous. But, like, I think with this game, maybe the hangover from international break that normally comes to effect, Arsenal kind of retreating straight away. So, obviously, we kind of want to see whether they're going to come at us, they're going to retreat. To be fair, they normally do retreat every time they play us. So, they retreated and gave us the ball. And I also think it's partly due to the crowd as well, because I really think the crowd was quite lackluster as well. So, they weren't, like, as loud and as, like, they were more quiet than usual. And I think the team were kind of just, like, they were kind of like representative of that, and we just kind of got on the ball, we were passing it around. I don't think the tempo was quick enough at all, not moving it around quick enough, allowing Arsenal to kind of play out their press a little bit too much, and it took kind of like a silly kind of action from Mikel Arteta to kind of wake everyone up. But all of a sudden, when Arteta does that, whatever he does to Klopp, the crowd just literally goes, whoa, like, you know what I'm saying? That's our manager, you dumb. You know what I'm saying? And everyone just goes, like, everyone starts shouting. The team, Liverpool gets into it. We start moving it quicker. We start, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it's kind of a strange one. Like, it's not until that Arteta done that. It's like, that's when we kind of got going. But normally you do see Liverpool kind of start very, very quickly.
Yeah, it's an interesting point from Peter there, because I kind of half feel like it kind of is a bit of a calculated thing that they put into the game plan, because one of the things I've noticed recently is kind of towards the last 20, 15 minutes of game, when we have quite a strong start, we're blowing really hard, physically, and looking more tired than usual. Obviously, it's bound to happen, with the age of the players and whatnot. So with a bit more of a controlled start, and then you hit a catalyst switch at some point. At this point, it came a little bit quicker because Arteta thought he was a bad man and then tried it on the touchline for some odd reason, yet to be known to the
masses. There was genuinely nothing wrong with that attempt by Mane to win the ball, by the way. Like,
Sal says different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. It was a fair effort to win the ball, but... Do you think that is a conscious decision, the slower start and then to kind of ramp it up later on in the game, just to make sure they've got a bit more control and kind of treat it a bit more like a boxing match at first?
You know what? I never really thought too much about it. I get Peter's point about, international, coming back from the international break, a bit of rust, crowd were a bit quiet as well. So maybe it was just taking a while for them to pick it up. But your point is valid. If you kind of look at the Brighton game, for example, we were kind of blazing them for the first half. And then look what happened second half. We gassed out and that's how they hit us. That's how they got us. So maybe Klopp thought, you know what? We know how Arsenal want to set up anyway. They're not going to really try and hit us. So for that reason, we may as well just sit back, just kind of relax a bit. And then when they least expect it, that's when we're going to go after them. And yeah, obviously you had the fortuitous situation of Arteta kind of... igniting the fans and kind of getting them going, and that probably did help a lot, that because obviously tempers were flying, but yeah, I can see how that could have been something about us more managing our energy as well. I guess we'll be able to tell on Saturday when we play Southampton and see how we start then.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it was I mean, it's a combination of, just, you know, it rushed after the international break and maybe a little bit of something they've done research-wise, coaching. Of course, that catalyst moment does happen where the whole ground gets riled up, the team gets riled up. Again, I still think he's absolutely insane that you would try something like that with a manager whose players would literally run for a brick wall for him. It makes no sense whatsoever. And I think we could all agree that Arteta will probably get battered as well. So does that add an incentive there as well? We do create a fair bit first half. Every, you know, kind of like from 25 onwards, it is all Liverpool. I think Arsenal, up until half-time, only really have the one shot from Lokonga. And it's a decent save from... I say it's actually a fairly routine save from Alisson. But, you know, we turn the style on and we do get the goal fairly early on. Peter, I'll come to you. I'm kind of talked about a little bit on the pod at the weekend, the Patreon exclusive. It's just a fantastic ball from Trent this season. In a season where he's delivered from set pieces hasn't been the greatest. Again, do you think there's something that they should be working on a little bit more to kind of create these chances when we've got a lot of players who are very good aerially?
Do you know what? I think regarding set pieces, I think he's had a couple of games where they're a bit shaky, but in terms of crossing, his set pieces have been really good. His shooting, his set pieces haven't been good. So when it's direct, that's when I think he hasn't been too good, apart from obviously the West Ham game when he scores. I don't think shooting-wise he's been that good, but you know what I'm saying? I think we scored the most from corners this season. I think we got six. You know what I'm saying? So that means I think most of the crossings have come from him or Shimkas. So I do think his crossing ability has been amazing. But like, he's just, when you have a talent like Trent, you always have that kind of threat of scoring from a set piece. And he literally, that's like a dime. Like, he puts it right on Mane's head and then Ramsdale can't get to it. But yeah, I think Trent was so fortunate again. I'm blessed to have someone who has like a wonderful right foot. And my thing with Trent is that like I think a lot of people obviously compare him to other fullbacks, but where he differs for me and where like he's better than a couple of other fullbacks is that he's the prime creator of our team. And other fullbacks, their responsibilities are to kind of, you know what I'm saying, players obviously like a fullback, but in terms of getting a good ball in and trying to whip it, whereas Trent's responsibility is actually to break down a team, try and create, not just through crossing, actually through a different range of passing, through balls, through low-driven crosses, through whips, you know what I'm saying? So, but like, you know what I'm saying? Other fullbacks, it's just kind of like, okay, I've got a good crossing ability. As long as I can get to byline or I can, you know what I'm saying, work an angle, maybe I might be able to cross it. But we're using Trent in two different positions. So in build-up, he might come into centre mid or sometimes he might hug the touchline. But like, he's our prime creator. His responsibility is to break down teams. Like, There's maybe Cancelo's the other one who's got sort of a responsibility, but I would argue that it's not the same because Man City have other creators, whereas we don't have as many creators as Man City. So, again, with Trent, like, it's a thing where it's like, if, say, we struggle to create chances, it will be Trent's, like, the main bulk of that fault, the response, like, it will be Trent's kind of fault along with Robertson, along with other people, but it will be mainly Trent's fault. But if Chelsea struggle to create chances, it's not Reece James' fault. You know what I'm saying? He's just one of many. If, I don't know, other fullbacks, you know what I'm saying? It won't be their fault. But with us, it's like Trent is our prime creator. Trent, the influence he has on the game is so much more compared to other fullbacks. So, yeah, I think that's why he's top notch. Obviously, he's a top player, and we're lucky to have him on our hands.
Yeah, Fahy, you got any follow up on what Peter said there? Because I think it's really interesting that what he says in terms of the creation aspects. How do you feel with that and his evolution of the role this season, you know, with him kind of playing a bit more central midfield when we do kind of go a bit more forward? Do you think that's added a few more strings to his bow from an attacking sense?
Oh, no, man. I feel as if he kind of got to... I don't really see how much more he could have kind of improved from what I've seen in the past, 18 months? Obviously, from a defensive point of view, it's a different conversation, but talking about the attacking side of things, I think he's been... He's been stellar. And yeah, there have been improvements. I think he gets into better positions more. I think he reads the game much better and gets into like better spaces when he's not on the ball. But yeah, with the ball, he's just the same as before. I've not really seen that much of a change. I just think the quality is just as good. I know people have been talking about his set pieces. I know you mentioned it 5 minutes ago They've not exactly been the greatest. I think that's what you're trying to get at. But I think they've improved the past couple of games. I think the delivery has been more on point. I think the last three games, his delivery has been more on point. Obviously, he scored against West Ham, but let's not count that. But in general, the corners, the free kicks, they have been better. I think, yeah, with Trent, it's a really weird one, man. I don't have much to criticise him on, apart from the defensive aspect of his game. Attacking-wise, I think it's fantastic.
No, I completely agree. I think the thing with the set pieces I'm on about is I feel like even though I think we've scored a fair few this season, I feel like we should always be scoring more.
You think?
Just because when you've got Virgil, when you've got Matip, they always feel like they should be bagging way more from those kind of situations.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I still don't think Matip is the most commanding.
Matip scores so much more, like for his size.
Yeah. But in general, I think even in the Arsenal game, they were saying we've scored the most from set pieces this season in the Premier League.
So,
even then, if you include the goal that happened afterwards, I think the goal happened afterwards before they said that. I think we're doing all right, man. I think you've been a bit harsh. It's more the left side that's been the issue. I think it's when Robbo's been taking set pieces.
Well, that was going to be my next point, because I think whenever you see Tsimikas in the 11, one of the things we've praised him from here to high heaven about is his kind of set piece delivery. Mm-hmm. And I think you saw it again. He had a really good one, and it was to Virgil. I think I have to look at the XG on that, but it felt like it was a decent opportunity for him.
And him and Matip both went for it at the same time?
Yeah, that was the one.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic delivery. So I just think there's certain situations where we could possibly be a little bit better from set pieces. Like, I mean, you look at the Mane goal. One of the things that Matip does really well, he screens the defender who's supposed to be on Mane. So he's got a clean run for the ball. And obviously Trent has put that on an absolute dime. It's a perfect pass. And it's just a simple conversion for Mane to make. So I think with just little tweaks and, you know, just a bit of creativity, we can get even more reward from our set pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, fair. It's fair. I mean, you can always do better. It's not like we've reached a fucking pinnacle of set pieces. So, yeah, we can always do better. for sure.
No, I completely agree. I want to talk about kind of how we approach the game from a pressing point of view. One of the things that Arsenal tried to do a lot in the first half and failed to do spectacularly in the beginning of the second half was play out from the back. Successful analysis there from all the video guys and whatnot to identify that. Talk to me how impressed you guys were with the press from this game in comparisons to fixtures from earlier on in the season.
Yeah, I think a lot of our successes from Saturday, we pressed at the right times and at the right intensity, but a lot of it was Arsenal were just so lackadaisical with the ball, man. It just didn't sense what they were doing. And I just feel as if it showed their immaturity as a team to think they can come to Anfield against our forwards and kind of play across the back like that. Like, you can't be doing that. You're not at the Emirates. You're not playing a mid-table team in the Premier League. You're playing Liverpool, one of the best. And I get you have to stick to your philosophy and all that kind of stuff, but I still feel as if there's a time and place to be doing that. And they kind of cause their own problems. We knew they were going to do that because we know that Arteta is stuck in his ways. So we knew exactly what to do. We knew exactly their patterns of play. We knew exactly where the fullbacks were going to go, where they prefer to pass it. They usually pass it centrally when they receive the ball in the flanks. Like, we knew all of that stuff. So that's how they got undone.
Pierre?
Yeah, 100%. Because you know what? The reason why I said it wasn't like a tactical thing to be kind of like that's physical or whatever in the first 20 minutes was because I feel like they kind of got out of our press a couple of times in the first 20 minutes. So there was a couple of times where Ramsdale, he got to midfield and they got it to Saka really quickly. And then Saka started running at Van Dijk or Saka started running at Tsimikas. And I was thinking, obviously, we don't want that to kind of happen. But then obviously, once we got into it, I think once the crowd got into us, we came out with a bit more intensity. And you saw Jota, Mane, Chamberlain kind of all press as like a unit. And that's how we won the ball quite quickly. And especially, there was a period in the first half, the first bit of the second half, where we just absolutely kept them in. So the first 10 minutes of the second half, they literally couldn't get out anywhere. And I think we kind of benefited from Nuno Tavares and Lukonga's first, this is their first time at Anfield, playing at Anfield for Arsenal. So they were just kind of like bearing the headlights. They were getting pressed. The way Lukonga plays, he's kind of like,
Lukonga was trying it on the turn a lot and then was just getting dispossessed.
That's so genuinely how he plays. Like, when I watch him this season, he likes to take extra touch. He likes to kind of be on the ball. So that would help. That benefits us. And again, Tavares is another one who doesn't know. Like, if you're getting pressed, just hook it down the line, but Anfield is not the time to be doing whatever. So yeah, I think we benefit from that. And like Fahy said, Arteta's never ever going to change his tactics. Like, a normal team in that second half would have just went, okay, we're getting pressed. Let's go long. The next 10, 20 minutes, you know what I'm saying? Forget this, you know what I'm saying, our philosophy for a little bit. Let's just go long to Aubameyang, long to Lacazette. Maybe he can hold it up. But, you know what I'm saying, Arteta team will not change their ways. They'll just keep playing out of the back, kept playing out of the back. And yeah, it just fell straight into our hands.
Yeah. You know what you're going to get with Arsenal, man. Especially an Arteta-managed Arsenal. It's just the same thing. They're just so set in their ways. You respect it because obviously they have a philosophy they believe in. Sorry, but
you know what? It's been working, I guess, because Ramsdale's distribution is really, really good, and obviously Ben White is also really good on the ball. But yeah, against Liverpool, Jota especially, his pressing has improved. I can't so much. Like, if you go back, especially to like the last season against like Aston Villa, where we lost whatever 7-1 or 7-2 against Real Madrid. We lost, like, his pressing in those games were absolutely horrendous. Like, he didn't know where to kind of press, obviously because he's new, right? You know what I'm saying? Style is quite a complex, you know what I'm saying, thing to take in. But then if you compare that to now, I think this season, apart from Salah, and obviously Salah's played every single game, Jota is the second most presser in our team. So it just shows that Jota, his pressing this season has improved tenfold, and yeah, he's really taken to Klopp's kind of style.
Yeah, 100%. And I think beginning of the season, Jota was being criticised a lot for not being as clinical in front of goal. But, you know, I think they were trying to kind of get him sped up with the pressing kind of ways of playing as a centre forward. So after a few games, you kind of saw that, you know what, he's really improved that side of his game. Now he can kind of go back to sniffing around the box. But he also knows now when is the right time to press, where he needs to be going, at what intensity. And yeah, it's clearly working out because you've seen the last few games again. He's doing the right thing.
And it definitely worked out on Saturday as well. First of all, the awareness to kind of get the ball dispossessed. Legend says that Ben White is still sliding somewhere. Where he's sliding to, we don't know. Hopefully, we can get an update on that as soon as possible. But Fahy, I'll come back to you. The cuteness of that finish is so fantastic. What were your first reactions when you did see that goal?
Yeah, no, it was nice. I smiled and I clapped at, 2:15, 2:20 in the morning. So, yeah. So it was nicely done.
You managed to avoid that goal, Fahy, all over on Twitter. And that was the first time you saw that goal?
Yeah.
Legit.
I avoided everything. I told you. I literally avoided everything. I just checked live score. Live soccer, live score. Yeah, I checked that at 7:30. Saw the score. And that was it.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah. Well, bro, when I need to be disciplined, I'm going to be disciplined, man. And Liverpool Arsenal is my favorite game of the season. So yeah, I really wanted to see WAB because there are bitches, man. I like watching. I'm not going to say that. Anyways, you guys can work out. You guys can work out what I'm trying to get at. But yeah, I mean, it was nicely done. I love seeing defenders make errors and we capitalize on it. Like, it's one of my favorite things in football. It's just so pleasing to watch when a defender makes an error and we capitalize and we score. It was beautifully done. He was so composed. I think Ben White thought that he was going to shoot to his left. So his body was going there. But obviously Jota kind of fainted and went the other way. Did it beautifully. And it made it even better because 30 minutes previous to that, why am I saying Ben White? I mean Ramsdale. 30 minutes previous to that, Ramsdale was smiling because he made a couple of saves that were straight at him. And he was there like...
So, what are your guys' opinions on Aaron Ramsdale? Because I always think with goalkeepers, there's like a really easy sell to make that they're saving things. You know, they have a really high save percentage. But from what I've seen with him, all of his saves are basically stuff he should be saving routinely and on target.
All right. Okay. All right. It's...
It's a weird Johnson's entered the room as well. Biggest hater. Yeah.
Apart from that Leicester save, though, just because I know there'll be other fans. You didn't see that Leicester save was mad.
So for me, that Leicester save is poor positioning.
Oh, allow it, man. That they wrote a whole article on a fucking save.
Yeah, like, their brother's starving.
With Ramsdale, I think what it is, yes, he has been good. Let's be real. He has done well. But a lot of it is down to the fact that we thought he was going to be shit. Arsenal fans thought he was going to be crap. We all thought he was going to be crap. So for that reason, he has really surprised us with the way he has performed. And now the press and just everyone in general, they're hyping it up to be at a level which it really isn't. And yes, I mean, if you want to be a bit pessimistic, you can say a lot of the shots are saved straight at him. He's been good, but I don't think he's been good as everyone's made out. The distribution stuff, again, I don't think, yes, his accuracy is on point, but sometimes with distribution, you need to look at what it leads to. It's all good making 50-yard diags, but then nothing happens. Like, if you look at what Ederson does, when he's distributing the ball, it's for a reason. There's a purpose. There's a move that they're trying to make. When Ramsdale does it, I don't think that it's the case, really and truly. I think, yeah, his passing is on point. Distribution is good. But it's all good having good distribution. What are you doing with the ball afterwards? I'd say he's done all right. I don't think it's been good enough to be in a combined 11 fight card. But, yo, that's not my beef. Krish, that's your beef with Julian. I'll let you, man, talk on that one. But
we were robbed, you know. I've never seen such hijinks and thievery since, you know, Montreal in 97.
I knew you were rattled, so I never spoke to you about it. I was like, you know what? I'm going to allow
What gave it away was my face expressions right into the card. Jerry's just sitting there like, what the fuck is going on?
I was watching it on the train. And I was thinking, this is fucking stupid, man. But
because the funny thing was, I can obviously tell Dan and Shabs have done a lot of planning behind this.
Oh, 100%.
Diabolical work. I got in 20 minutes before that fight card went live, so I'd done fuck all. I just thought, you know, get a few bars out and whatnot. But yeah, man, we were set up.
Listen, you know what it is? It reminded me of, you know, like the FA Cup when we'd get knocked out by Burnley. Like, you think like, oh yeah, this is an easy dub. We're here. Don't watch this.
You know what? They like that fight card came at the perfect time. Like so the whole season we hadn't lost a game. We lost to West Ham and Arsenal. It's been on like 10 games.
This is the thing, man. Especially with the Alisson point as well.
Literally just after. So no way Ramsdale's been better than Alisson this season. No bloody way. But literally that game is the worst game it could have came. Like Alisson has saved us in so many games this season. Like, I can point to Norwich. I can point to Crystal Palace. I can point to so many games. But like, you know what I'm saying? He makes the mistake against West Ham. Oh no, Alisson's had a terrible season. Blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm saying? And then like, just like Van Dijk, the level he's playing at this season, him playing at 60% is still better than Ben White. Like, what are you actually like?
I think it was Gabriel, not Ben White.
No, it was Ben White and Matic. Those are the two centre backs, right?
That they sure? It was Gabriel.
Was it?
But it was Gabriel. Again,
Smith Rowe picked over Mane. Mane's second top goal scorer this season. But like, it's just this: they are benefiting from, like Faye said, all of their players not being that very good or kind of overachieving, and because we're not like, what's it called? We're not like absolutely, you know what I'm saying?
We're not media, innit?
We're not like, you know what I'm saying? So they're just benefiting from these young boys doing kind of well, doing okay. And our players, for our players to get in, they literally have to be like Salah, bloody, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Listen, it was good work by Dan and Shabs. Yo, two good guys. They planned it out well.
But the worst one is Lacazette. He scored one goal.
They didn't plan that out well at all. That was just Babs being a bum. He's a massive
like, one goal. One goal. Like, bro, even Firmino's got like five goals this season. Like, what?
They didn't plan that out well at all. But the rest of it, kudos to them. They did very, very well.
Babs, you should be ashamed of yourself. I know you listen to this. Babs, you are an absolute bum. Like, that team... You are a disgrace. You should be taking off a fight card. I don't want to see you on a fight card again.
He's a big disgrace.
You watch football. You know football. So for you to do that, shameful. Put down a drink and bloody, you know what I'm saying? Shameful.
But yeah, back to the Ramsdale point. He's been good. He has been good. But I think it's purely because we all thought he was going to be shit. So because he's looked half decent, it's like, oh, Ramsdale's amazing. He should be England's number one. But now, I need to see a bigger portfolio of games, not just like 11 or 12. It needs to be a good 20, 25. And then we can be like, yeah, you know what? This guy has been solid.
Yeah, the sample size is going to be key, especially with, you know, with the World Cup on the horizon as well. We're talking about goalkeeper distribution. Third goal is the peak pinnacle of it. It's a really good, really, really well worked team goal. Alisson to Tsimikas, Tsimikas to Jota, Jota to Mane, and then Mane to Salah. It is the antithesis of what Klopp's Liverpool is built on: quick transitional football. And something I want to see a lot more of in the future, really, because when the team is clicking like that, it is very, very, very hard to beat. I want to talk about the midfield. So the options were scarce.
He is ready.
Yeah, go on. Let's go, Chris. Let's go.
Yeah, I want to talk about the midfield because I thought it was an interesting selection. Obviously, when you have Fabinho and Thiago, you know, with that stat that they've, you know, never lost a game when playing with each other and, you know, X, Y, and Z. But then you have the wild card factor of Oxlade-Chamberlain there. And as you can tell by the car sound effect, it is very much a wild card. But with the two of the other midfielders being very stable and providing, you know, interceptions, defensive stability and whatnot, it allowed Oxlade-Chamberlain to be a bit more aggressive and kind of play to his strengths a lot more in this game. How do you think that balance of the midfield worked in our favour at the weekend?
Yeah, to be fair, Chris, like let's call a spade a spade. Like, you know, I think I could play with Thiago and Fabinho. Come on, those are literally two of the top like 10 midfielders in the Premier League. Those two, again, I've always said if Thiago stays fit and he plays alongside Fabinho, you've got a hell of a chance of winning, you know what I'm saying, something big. So, but now I'm joking. Now, let me, agendas aside, I don't really have an agenda on Ox, but like he played really well. That game, I think that's the best game he's played this season in terms of his energy, even in terms of, you know, the chance that surprised me was when I think they crossed it in and it might have been Smith Rowe and he literally just tracked Smith Rowe all the way back. And it was
really impressive in the first half, yeah.
And it was just like, wow, I ain't seen, you know what I'm saying? That was great play from great work, effort, and intensity to get back, because you also, like, even in the Brighton game, I think Klopp was talking about people not having the right attitude towards like defending and going back, but Chamberlain definitely showed it there. But yeah, in terms of like you said, so what happens with that midfield, just to go into it quite like tactically, is that obviously we know it's the typical kind of three midfield. Fabinho sits deeper, but what ends up happening is that kind of Thiago comes deeper to kind of collect the ball and it kind of goes into like a pivot. So, and Fabinho slides more to the right and Thiago comes into the pivot and he goes to collect the ball of Van Dijk. Obviously, we know Thiago loves the ball, and he's a midfielder that he always shows. Like, you have these kind of midfielders these days, they kind of like search and destroy midfielders and they don't really want to be on the ball. But Thiago's a complete opposite. Every time he kind of shows for the ball, he wants the ball. He helps us in build up so much. So he kind of comes into a double pivot and that allows Chamberlain to kind of push forward a bit more and press and help the front three and support the front three. And you know what I'm saying? Also create a triangle with Trent if he can as well, help Salah. Yep. So yeah, it worked perfectly. Like, I think, especially that game, Ox, it was very high intensity, fast-paced game, and that suits Ox because he's very intense. He likes to get the ball, likes to drive, and yeah, that he played really well. Big him up. But my big shout has to go to Thiago because I think Thiago was absolutely superb in that game. He's kind of like doing the things that kind of he's not getting a goal, he's not getting an assist, but he's just really helping us in terms of progressing the ball. So every time he'll get the ball from Van Dijk, get the ball from Tsimikas, and just progressing it 10 yards, progressing it 5 yards, and he's literally like, and like I said on our Patreon, he was doing what Genie does, but more. So he was actually offering a lot more on the ball, but also covering the spaces that Genie would cover and also helping us defensively. So yeah, again, I think Thiago was absolutely superb in that game. And like you said, him and Fabinho have got an excellent record together. I think they've won 9 out of the last 10 games. And yeah, he was superb in that game.
Yeah, Thiago is not one for the GA nerds. who just sit there and go, ah, where's the GA from midfield?
He's one for the Perry's nerds, though.
1,000%. Especially when you look, progressive carries.
Okay. That's the Bantics. Hey, if you listen to the Bantics pod, that's on our Patreon where me and Mike kind of break down the stats of Liverpool, but yeah.
And especially, you know, you look on that left hand side where I think it's needed a bit more TLC from a progressive attacking point of view, especially when Robbo's been playing. That will definitely help alleviate a few more of those concerns, because you saw the interlink with him and Mane a few times as well, and he was allowing Tchimikas to push up a little bit more too. So, yeah, it was fantastic. Fahy, what were your thoughts on Ox from the weekend? Because he's very much been malaligned, and you know, we've pigeonholed him as someone who possibly should look for a move, just for himself more than anything. But do you think he showed enough kind of? I can't think of an expression yet. I was going to go for like some really weird poetic expression. Do you think he's shown enough to kind of say that he can have a decent impact within this team for the progression of the season? Because he feels like someone who has been lost in the past few years of the evolution of this Liverpool team and just hasn't had a place to really call his own.
I know the team has evolved past him, number one. They've outgrown him. He came in at a time where, you know, things were on the up. Klopp was kind of setting a way of playing. And he suited that. He suited that chaos football. He suited 17-18. But as time's gone on, and with his body breaking down as much as it has, he's not been able to kind of evolve alongside the team. So yeah. What you've ended up having is the same arc from 17-18. I don't feel as if you've seen much improvement. There's definitely been better understanding of, again, pressing and carrying the ball forward. But other than that, I don't really see what more he can kind of bring to this team. Now, there's an argument to be had that with Milner potentially retiring next year, and the lack of English players in the squad anyway, from a homegrown point of view, you may need to keep an Ox. He's a good utility player to have. But I think you and I have said it previously, Chris, that someone like Ox can still offer quite a lot to another team. Yep. It just isn't Liverpool. And I think that's what it is. Now, yeah, he played really well on Saturday. I was super impressed by him. So, yes, I will big him up for that. It was a great performance. I thought he was so confident on the ball, and he really you can tell he really wanted to grab a goal. He really wanted to give his all. He was doing what we want him to be doing, and it reminded me of a 17-18 performance. But the thing with that is, I think a lot of that is down to who he was playing alongside and who was behind him. So because he knew he had Fabinho and Thiago, Ox was allowed to roam and cause chaos, which is what he loves. Now, try and get Ox to play with Hendo and Fabinho, you're not going to get that version of Ox. It's completely different. But because he knows he's got the reliability of Thiago and Fabinho behind him, he's more confident, and he knows he can literally just roam in front, and it's absolutely fine. When it's Hendo, no offence to Hendo, it's a bit different. Hendo's not as solid as a Fabinho and Thiago duo. He's not as reliable with the ball at his feet. Ox has to do a little bit more, and that's where the problem starts. So, yes, if you're going to have Fabinho and Thiago, Ox can definitely play alongside them. It should be fine for most times. But, yeah, it's tough. I don't want to be harsh on him because I've been super harsh on him for the past season. But, yeah, I still think this is the season for him to kind of just get back into playing. We need bodies. We're going to have Salah and Mane go. He's probably going to have to play further forward at some point in January. And then he's got a year left on his Connie. It runs out in 2023. So he can just get a move, go to West Ham, like we've been saying for the past three seasons. I don't know what more to say about him, man. Because I genuinely like him.
He's a nice guy. My thing is that, like, I know obviously people think that, or obviously in the Cop and Chat, they would think that, like, I absolutely hate him and that. But he's a good guy. Like, he's a really nice guy. You know what I'm saying? He bonds well with the team. He's got a great attitude. But my kind of worries, and I would ask the question to like you, Chris, I'd ask the question to David, and I'd ask the question to like Mike as well, who are quite big fans of him, is that so his best performances this season, right, are against Arsenal and Milan, right? No, not Milan, sorry, Atletico Madrid. Those are two best performances. And obviously those performances come at home at Anfield, where you have the crowd behind you, kind of have like a fast-paced game. You have, kind of have like intensity to these kind of games because it's like, you know what I'm saying, you press because we're at home. The onus is on us to kind of, you know what I'm saying, win the game and kind of take it to the other team. But my worries with Ox is that the majority of teams that we face, because we're Liverpool and because we won a Premier League, we won a Champions League, they're going to sit back against us. And it's more of a case of maybe 80% of our games, you know what I'm saying, in the season is that we have to break down the other team. And then they're kind of like slow. They're kind of like methodical. We're kind of, we need to get the ball and kind of break down a low block most of the times. And my thing with Ox is that I don't think he's a creative player. I think he can score goals and he likes to drive at teams. And this kind of can create space, but this doesn't make him creative. You know what I'm saying? I think when someone's creative, I think of like Trent. I think of players that can play a ball, like I'm saying, play a dime and kind of unlock defenses with a pass, whatever. Obviously, Ox has a good cross in him and he has a good shot, but I wouldn't say he's necessarily creative. So I don't think Ox kind of offers us enough in terms of breaking down teams. And I think to be one of our midfielders is either you kind of give us the defensive solidarity or you're creative. So you have like Fabinho, you have Henderson, maybe your kind of defensive Milner as well, who kind of can fill gaps or kind of defensively. And you have like Curtis, you have Curtis, you have Elliot, you have Thiago, Keita, who kind of unlock defenses with their, you know what I'm saying, attributes. But Ox is kind of in the middle. He can't really give us a defensive solidarity, and he can't break down the team. So it's kind of like, where does he kind of fit in this team? That's where my problem lies with Ox, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How can he help us break down teams?
Yeah, I just don't like when the biggest attribute for said midfielder is, oh, he's got energy and he can cause chaos. Like, what the fuck? Like, that's not a selling point.
I just want Chris to answer that question because obviously you might see a future for him. So in terms of where you see a future for him, where it could be in a forward, I don't know, maybe where do you kind of see a future for Ox if he does stay?
It's a weird one because he's very much a chaos player, isn't he? He thrives in those matches where it goes a little bit back and forth. I think he showed a bit more of a mature aspect in the Atletico Madrid game more than this game because, I don't know about you lot, kind of first half an hour, there were a few instances where he just got the ball head down, no kind of spatial awareness, and he was just driving forward.
Like running into like three men. Yeah. I love that shit.
Yeah, it's like Ross Barkley used to do that all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Funny enough.
It's like, I don't particularly know what you're doing, but it is an odd one because he's also a rhythm player as well. So it's hard to judge him when he's not getting a consistent run of games as well. But it's going to be an odd one because I think this upcoming summer for us in midfield is a massive summer because there's so many players going to be out of contract. And there's, you know, the Milner point's a really interesting one, by the way, Fai, because I think he sneakily gets a 1-year extension.
Again, let my guy rest, man.
No, Millie's last dance.
Think about it.
We need to make this guy dance, man.
Let that guy at Mourinho's coaching staff now dance.
Yeah, that's what we're doing to Millie right now, man. Come on, let the guy rest.
So the only reason I say it is because World Cup and the short turnarounds and whatnot. So it makes sense to keep him around for maybe one more year. That's the only reason.
I can't keep defending him. I've been doing it for too long, man.
His actual performances, objectively, have been quite good this season.
They have, but what I mean is
really good.
Yeah, but I feel so irritated when people shit on him, and it's like like 36, and now he's gonna be 37, and some Neek is on the agenda. It's like, come on, man. The bloke is 37. Like, what do you want? Like, he's going to lose the ball sometimes and he's not going to catch up to a player. Like, what do you want me to say to that?
But back to the Ox point. I kind of want to see how it goes from now till the end of January. Just because he's going to get a few more chances within January and December as well, because one of the things I want to cover up in a little while is just how key rotation is going to be in the next few weeks with us, you know, dead rubber Champions League games, and we've got that weird League Cup game against Leicester where I don't think anyone particularly cares, and the manager would love to get knocked out.
He cares.
No, you guys show me the run now. That run was peak. Oh my god!
End of the day, I've got the screenshot of Peter saying, "Yeah,
I do want to win it." But like that run was, there's no way you can get around that run.
You can't. One thing I just want to add quickly about Ox, I think we should definitely be starting him against Southampton. If you're on a good run of form, and if we're playing at home again, really and truly, we shouldn't be changing the team. So that's, I would hope.
I don't know who you can actually put in, because there's no argument to say you play Hendo tomorrow just from a fitness aspect. And do you really need John Henson against Southampton? I'd be very concerned if you did. So it just makes sense to play. It actually makes sense to play the exact same midfield
100%.
Against Arsenal, against Southampton, because
it would just be nice to have a bit of like familiarity.
Oh yeah, and that's the key thing, and I think it's one of the reasons why we've been conceding so many goals in the past, from that previous international break up to the latest one, is because the familiarity in midfield was just so chop and change from every single week. Due to injuries and just from a general rotation point of view, it messed with the mojo and the flow of the team. So it makes sense to kind of keep one consistent 11 for the next couple of weeks or so, at the very least, while other players get back up to speed. Before we kind of move on to other topics, I want to just talk about how good it was to see Minamino get a goal. It was really good. It was fantastic. I was really impressed with the work that Mane did to receive the ball, hold it up. He's beaten the washed allegations.
I need more. If that's washed, I need all of that.
If this is the new era of washed, I need that. I need that washed. And even in terms of battles of the washed hairlines, I saw Gabriel's and I was like, "Woo! What is going on there, brother?" You also need a trip to Turkey to fix whatever the hell was going on there.
Tomiyasu, you guys, meant to be a lockdown defender. They were telling me that, like, you know what I'm saying?
I was listening to Tachi Guna's podcast, and someone mentioned, and they were like, oh, you know what? Tomiyasu is really good defensively, but he's not that great offensively. And then someone was like, how do you know he's not that good offensively? Maybe it's by choice. Maybe they're telling him not to go forward. Maybe he's really good with the ball going forward. It's like, you guys, man, you guys never learn. And then literally on Saturday, we were like, you know what? If Tomiyasu has the ball, have the ball, man.
Yeah,
Do something. And we saw what he's about, man. He's a good signing, a good find. For the level that they're at, but yeah, he's not as good as they made out again.
He's got that Wan-Bissaka pack.
Wan-Bissaka
pack that's another pack, man. I don't know where you begin with that pack.
A lot of them, I find it incredibly frustrating with Arsenal players that, like, when they kind of start to do kind of well, you just hear too much about them.
Too much.
Let these guys cook. You know what I'm saying? Right, you overrate them too much.
They never learn.
He's got cooked by Cucurella. He's got cooked by Mane. Like, in just the space of, like, let the guy, you know what I'm saying? Let the guy, again, with Partey, he's a good player. But then when you start telling me he's top five in the Prem, he's world-class, he's this, he's that, like, this is not a performance of a guy who's world-class. Since he's come to Arsenal, he's been decent at most, you know what I'm saying? And like Partey, again, like, he's got to show much more than that, you know what I'm saying? He should be bossing Thiago about, he should be bossing Fabinho about. I know
whatever PR effort Arsenal fans have done with Thomas Partey, it should possibly get some industry award, you know?
You know what?
It doesn't make sense.
It's all based on Atletico. It's all based on what they thought they were signing. And he's been disappointing. He's not been as good as they thought he was going to be. That happens with a signing sometimes. It is what it is. But yeah, there's no point continuing to lie about it and continue to pretend nonsense, because he's had a load of shoddy games, man. And Saturday, he literally let Ox boss him. And I don't know how you defend that one, because Ox has done it twice now to him.
So there were a lot of times where Jota was just peeling off him, and he was like, couldn't track him, couldn't cover him. Like, he's not got the legs that I thought, like, he would. You know,
there was a bit, there was a part in the, there was a part in the first half where Thiago, like, they just could, he could not, like, disengage the press, and he was just like pointing to get the ball off Thiago, and no one was around him trying to do anything. It was quite funny. But yeah, whatever PR effort. Maybe for Arsenal fans, don't do music videos for signings straight off the bat. Give them 6 months to bed in and then do the music video. Drop the single first, then do the video later.
I'm just trying to remember what we were like when Liverpool were washed, and were we like just trying to overrate absolutely everybody, or I can't, because I can't remember if it was to the levels that they go to kind of defend their players and try and make them look as...
So one example I'll use is, how much did you convince yourself when we signed Balotelli that this was going to work?
Oh, yeah, I was in. I was
But I was going to say that Balotelli is like the best in the world. I bought the shirt.
Yeah, you did, didn't you? You brought the shirt.
I bought the shirt, man. Number 4-5. I bought it on the day he signed. I was so happy. I was like, yes, we fucking got it. Balotelli, Sturridge, Sterling. We're going to fucking smash man up. Well, yeah, we saw it for one goal.
I think the difference is that, like, we was gassed because we were signing good players, but it's not like we were saying he's, like, you know what I'm saying, top 5 in the world or top 10.
Yeah,
whenever we signed anyone, I hope they can. Even when we signed Torres, like, Torres was a great young, you know what I'm saying, prodigy, but it was never like he's one of the best strikers in the world right now. It was always like, can he come and prove it at Liverpool first before man can call him this stuff? Whereas, like, Partey's already a top 5 midfielder in the world before he even gets to Arsenal, apparently. It makes no sense.
Yeah, you can't call someone a top 5 player in the world when we literally saw him get cooked at Anfield the season before. So it's just, they're a different breed. So it is what it is there. But yeah, Minamino, really good to see him get that goal. He gets it. I forgot
we're talking about. We're doing exactly what we're not supposed to be doing to him, man. This is what's been going on with him.
he's just there, like, no.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about him quickly. Oh, good lad.
It's nice to see him getting these goals in. And I think in every appearance that he's been in so far this season, he's looked really impressive. He looked like he's actually matured into what we need from this Liverpool side. Not to say he's mature as a player or whatnot, but I feel like he's finally getting the nuances of the attack. So do we all expect him to play tomorrow, against Porto? And if so, where do you see him playing?
I don't know what position Tacky plays, man. I don't.
That's the only downside to the Tacky experiment, because I still have no idea what side is his best.
Klopp said in the conference that, like, Tacky gives us a great problem. And you know when kind of we use a terminology like this, it's kind of like, ugh. Like, he was like, it gives us a great problem because he can kind of play 4 positions. He can play, like, left, right. He can play through the middle. He can play as an 8. And it's just like, well, damn, you don't really know his best position then. But, I think
it's, probably, it's his subtle way of saying, yeah, brother, I don't even know where he plays. So good luck for getting that one out.
Yeah, I think he'll play on one of the wings. So I think probably right wing. I can imagine that he probably takes Salah's place on the right. Origi goes probably through the middle. And I don't know, maybe like a Jota on the left or something like that. So maybe I'll take.
Now, what about Nico right wing, man?
No, he's been left as me for Wales. I've actually thought that. Let Nico cook.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Nico's playing further forward.
Yeah, he's been playing on the left.
Oh, I thought he's been playing on the right.
Because
for us, he played right wing.
Yeah, so we playing for Wales against Belgium, I think, was it last week? Yeah. He had this mad run, cut and shoot.
Yeah,
he was quite unlucky not to score, and it was from the left. So I was like, okay. Nice little experiment here to possibly get the price raised by about 5 million quid. So
what we're doing again, you're not talking about Tacky.
Yeah, true.
Do you know what? Yeah, the thing is with Tacky and Origi, it's kind of like, I want to see them play at least one game with with our best team. So it's unfair of them to every time they come in have to play with, like, you know what I'm saying, the youth teams, and kind of play with people that never played before. So, like, obviously, I just want Tacky to get a chance with Salah, Mane, you know what I'm saying, Thiago, Fabinho, because it's just like, okay, if he performs with our best, because obviously we'll have quality players around him, so hopefully he should improve too. So I hope that at least, you know what I'm saying, that maybe in January they kind of get a chance to play with our better players, and let's see what they can do, man.
I think, I just want to say one thing about Tacky, and it's like, I don't know if I've said it on the main pod on this pod if I've said it on the Patreon pod, but I just feel so sorry for him, man. And I always go back to this. Every single time I talk about him, I'm like, listen, I feel so sorry for the guy. He joined, he came to a city by himself, and then literally 2 weeks later, a pandemic happened. He was then forced to stay in his flat, not make any friends for months, didn't get to meet his teammates, had to do Zoom calls with them. He clearly didn't know much English, so he was finding it difficult to communicate with them. And then obviously he joins and starts playing in front of no crowd. There's no atmosphere, no nothing. Yeah, he wins the title and everything, but he didn't get that experience. He didn't get a good preseason either because of the pandemic again. And again, that entire season last season was in front of minimal crowds. There were some games where you had a percentage of people, but he didn't have a settled. Yeah, he didn't have a settled start to the Liverpool career. Then he got sent out on loan. And it's like, you know what, man? I think Klopp's not exactly helped bed him in, pause, to the team. But I just feel as if the circumstances to his signing and just everything's not worked out so far. So I really want him to do well. We can see the quality in him. None of us have ever said, you know what, Taki's shit. He should never. We've never said that. Because you can see he's actually good on the ball. You can see he's smart with his movement as well. The only problem with him is we don't actually know what his best position is. And the other thing is he doesn't call for the ball. He's just too quiet on the pitch. If you watch him when he comes on the pitch, he never calls for it. He hardly ever raises his hands. He just runs about and just hopes. He's just looking around, waiting for the ball to come to him.
He finds space, right? But he doesn't call for the ball. But he finds like a lot of space.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I want him to do so well, man. I was so happy for him that he scored against Arsenal. And you can see how happy he was because that was his first goal.
Yeah, he loved that. He proper enjoyed it. And yeah, you can see how happy everyone else was for him as well. You can see how happy everyone else was for him as well with the celebration. So.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I just think he's been so unlucky with his move. I really hope we can kind of make it work with him, and I hope in the winter period we've got quite a few games coming up. I hope Klopp starts to use him, and we can see what he's about, and hopefully find out what his best position is. Because yeah, at this point we're still stumped.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think if he finds his voice a little bit more, you can definitely see how he'd operate as a number nine. But if he's not really calling for it, and you know he's getting in these good positions, it's all for naught really, isn't it, in terms of finding the space and whatnot. So it's definitely a good one to follow. Looking at the Porto game, it's a weird one. We've got two games where they're quite non-factors. I also feel a little bit sorry for someone, you know, like a kid or something. It's gonna be their first night, you know, first European night at Anfield under the lights, and it's not really got anything to play for considering we've done all of the good business before. It kind of reminds me of when I took an ex-girlfriend of mine to a Europa League game. It was the one against Utrecht, where Roy Hodgson lied and said he was going to put out a full Liverpool 11. He's like, "Oh yeah, I'm going to play Torres, Gerrard." Now I get there, and it's like Jovanovic is playing, and you know all these like shit guys.
And then Sam Asaidi and them, man.
Bro, they're just bums, man. It's just like Roy Hodgson literally embarrassed me in front of the host. That's what happened.
Where's Torres?
Like, that's how you went, you know. She was like, you told me these were good, and I was like, yeah, they're not. So yeah, man, Roy Hodgson embarrassed me in front of the host. That's what,
bro, you give us a lot of stories about you taking an extra football game, man. Why do you keep taking them football games? What the hell?
It's like, you know when like you go out with your girl, she actually picks the film.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that, but I just put the activity in it. Like, I've got these tickets, so I might as well just go now.
But you did it whilst you were washed.
Yeah, true. I just wanted the day out, to be honest with you, more than anything.
Oh, man, I don't respect
you. She's just there freezing, just not really. She has some interest in the football, surely.
She did have some interest in the football, so it wasn't too bad.
Okay.
But still, we were very washed. And
man, that period, we were definitely washed.
We were awful. The Washed Chronicles of Coffin Fracas coming soon to the Patreon page. But
no,
yeah,
no. Listen, you know.
We've got to relive the pain.
We were never there. Like, you got to forget. Like, man's forgot about all of that. Man, I'm prestige now. Like, man, I forgot about. We act brand new. You know that. Listen, everyone says that we act brand new. So let's actually act brand new. And yeah, you know what I'm saying. So, but yeah, that Porto game. I'm interested to kind of see a couple of people. I think. Yeah, I'm interested to see Tyler Morton because he was in a lot of farting spaces last day.
Yo. Yo.
Wow. Why was he in a fighting space yesterday, though? Someone, Chris, that's your guy.
Listen, I...
What space was he in, sorry?
He was in a fighting space. Bro, literally, it was his Twitter account. And he was in a space here where people were just jumping on the mic, fighting. And Tyler Morton was in that space.
If it was the squirting space, I could possibly defend him, but a farting space, that's Ellis's boy there. That ain't mine.
He was doing that whole sing your dialect and whatever yesterday. Did you see that, Chris?
I saw Bruno in one of them, and I was like, brother, you got a game in like, you know, an hour. What's going on here? Yeah,
yeah. Tyler Morton was listening to farts, mate. He was listening to a man.
He just made his Premier League debut. Like, what? Is that what you're going to be doing?
I might have to divest the stocks now.
Players having a sense of humour, but hey.
Yeah, true. Farting spaces. Technology is such a wonderful thing, and then we just do things like farting spaces. You know what I mean?
God must hate us, man, isn't it? He must just look down.
He does, isn't he?
Oh, fucked up, man.
Fucking hell. Steve Jobs is crawling in his grave. Sorry, Peter,
hopefully he's in the right frame of mind to play a game. I'm happy to see. I want to see Phillips. You know, I haven't seen Phillips play a game for donkeys yet. I feel sorry. He just played. Like, he signed a new contract. Obviously, I know why he signed a new contract. Obviously, to kind of protect his value. But hopefully, he gets a game along with Konate. You see Nico Williams. But yeah, I have this sneaky suspicion, especially because, in my opinion, I think the player that always does the press conferences always tends to play. And Thiago was doing a press conference yesterday, so I just have a sneaky suspicion that he's going to play. What do you guys think about Thiago starting tomorrow?
It would be fucking stupid if he does.
Yesterday, so, but it might be a thing where he needs rhythm, kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I saw
if
that.
If he does a quick 45, I'm okay with it. It's needless risk, isn't it? You know what I mean?
I mean, you can make five subs. You can make five subs in the CL. But based off that, I guess you could play a few main 11 players and kind of, I don't know, score a couple of goals first half and then ease off a bit.
I'm kind of scared he's going to play kind of a strong team because in the press, obviously, last post-match against Atletico Madrid, he said that, obviously, the person interviewing him, Klopp, said that, you can rest your team now. You got two games left. And he was like, I can't rest the team because we got reward money to win. Like, owners won't be very happy. So I don't know what you guys think. You think we're going to play a strong team or?
Yeah, I mean, we need the money, bro. So the summer thing is that we need as much. Beggars can't be choosers at this point. If 2.5 million is on the table for a win, you got to go for that win, baby.
Yeah, you got it, man.
Yeah, I think it'll be a mixture. I think Origi, Minamino, I don't know if Origi's still out with illness.
I think he trained today in the training
session. Okay, that's fine. Cool. So yeah, so I guess Origi, Minamino will start. Tyler Morton will definitely start. I wonder who starts in front of Robbo or Shimikas. Because if Robbo starts that, you can interpret that as yo, you're playing with the washed up kids, man. You're not main 11 this week.
If I was Robertson, I saw my name on the board, I'd be like, hey yo.
Hey, yo, respect, man.
The key will be whether Robertson plays Leicester because he'll be like, do you not rate me, innit? What are you doing here? League Cup. Okay, I see what it is.
Yeah, so obviously Gomez, Konate probably start.
So is Gomez fit again?
No, why?
He's not fit.
What's wrong with him?
He's I don't know. He's got an injury. So he said that he won't be back until
Mad. Okay, so Konate and Matip.
Konate and Phillips. That's what I'm
hoping. Or Phillips. But then again, Phillips has had ample opportunity to play other games like Carabao Cup and they've still not played him. So
I reckon he played this. Bro, I was watching the highlights from that Newcastle Brentford game. I played Nat Phillips in as many games as humanly possible to remind people how decent of a centre back he is because there is a market where we can get 15 million quid for him in this January transfer window.
Yeah, he's not bad. He's not bad. After all the jokes that everyone made.
Yeah,
no, he is good. He's not a bad defender aerially. And he did improve as time went on with the ball at his feet. Surprisingly, he did get better. But yeah, in terms of the team tomorrow, I think it'll be a mixture. I think, yeah, Peter has a point. Potentially Thiago, Hendo, potentially could start. And because we've got five subs, take him off at half-time on the 60th minute.
I think just the rotation aspects of the next few weeks are going to be so key as we, you know, kind of progress more into this festive period, because we're just going to need everyone fit and firing. And it's good opportunities to get people who are returning back from injury into some form of rhythm, get a few minutes into their legs especially, and just push on from there, because God knows we're going to need them in the next coming weeks, especially with AFCON and whatnot coming up. So it's just going to be interesting to see what happens with the squad utilisation.
Klopp, I got to give Klopp a little bit of a warning. I didn't like that. Well, you said, what, there's an African tournament coming up. Hey, big man. Hey, big man. Just a bit more than an African tournament, but hey. Yeah, carry on, Chris.
No, fair enough. I mean, if you want to beat... You saw what happened with Arteta, so if you want to beat that man...
I also got reprimanded, I'll be honest. I got reprimanded in a chat with Chris. So, yeah, listen, that tournament shouldn't be going ahead, in my honest opinion. I think, you know...
Wait, it should be going ahead. Maybe the timing should be changed, but...
It shouldn't be going ahead in Jan. That's what I mean. Like, I don't think the timing is correct. I think later on is fine, but I guess obviously temperature and all that kind of stuff. It's tough to time it.
And the World Cup as well. You can't do it in the summer.
And the World Cup. So you can't then have a World Cup in December and then have the AFCON in Jan. Yeah, like it's a bit peak. So I get they have to squeeze it in somewhere, but it's a bit problematic because I just don't understand how the flights and stuff are going to work. Like, I don't get it. I don't get how you're going to have to isolate and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's all different for every country. So
it was a weird one, wasn't it? Because obviously the lads came back from Brazil. They didn't have to isolate this time around. So
yeah.
I basically just given up on what the fucking crack is.
And then there's other people that had to go to Belgium and then came to England and
just
so they can bypass some weird rule.
It makes no sense.
Bro, it's weird, man. It's weird. But yeah, we can talk about AFCON in the end of December. And I'll watch my tone. I don't want to offend any AFCON fans. I'm also a big fan of AFCON, guys. I used to watch it on Eurosport. Let's not forget.
Man's talking like, you know that... I got a black friend, you know.
I
used to watch Eurosport back in the day.
Man. You know what, man? AFCON ball is so bad. It's just not good to watch. I can't.
Final was lit last year. You remember? Was it 2 years ago? It was Algeria versus Senegal. And Morris.
Now you know what my favorite tournament was? The tournament where Zambia won it. Because Zambia. Oh, yeah. They played so well, man, and they had no star players, no nothing. They were just a solid team, and I enjoyed that one. But
I can't remember the final it was last year. It wasn't Senegal. Was it Senegal, Chris? It was Algeria versus someone. But I know they knocked us out. Mahrez knocked Nigeria out with a free kick. Sweet free kick.
Yeah, I think Algeria won it, didn't they? And was Mane in the final, and they just couldn't get it done.
Yeah.
But that'd be interesting. Who are the clear-cut favourites for AFCON, by the way, Peter?
Who would I say that? I think it will still be Algeria, you know. They've got a great team. I know Ivory Coast haven't qualified Nigeria in the playoffs. I think it will probably, unless like you get a massive carry job from Salah. But yeah, I'll still see it as still being Algeria.
Why not Nigeria? Let's say Nigeria get past the playoffs.
Oshiman got injured, didn't he?
Yeah, but it's not even that. We have a plethora of attackers. Like, we have... Chukwueze, Villarreal, we have Dennis from Watford, we have Iwobi, we have Moses Simon, we have Iheanacho, we have Aribo from Rangers. But the problem is... 1 year.
Yeah,
1 year as well. So there's loads of literally attackers that we have. We've got a lot of good players as well, but our manager's not very good. So he keeps choosing people like... Igalo got called up last time. Like, what is Igalo still doing in the squad? You have people like Ahmed Musa still getting called up. So, yeah, our manager, Peter Overall, he's not very good. So, yeah, so his selection's a bit peak.
Okay, interesting.
But, yeah, how's your country doing?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to ask Chris, how's the Indian national team doing first?
They have a very, very nice football shirt. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I got updated on the Bangladeshi national team today in the group chat.
Yeah.
Apparently someone, Munjimul Islam or someone like that, has been bagging a few goals.
What?
I don't know what.
You don't follow them though. Like, even I know
why that. Why am I gonna follow Bangladesh?
Why am I gonna follow India in fucking football? Cricket,
a little bit of pride, no?
But, no, you know what it is, Peter? Where are we supposed to watch it? They're not even on TV.
If
it was on TV, it's a different conversation. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Let me see what these men are about. They don't even show it on Bangladeshi TV. It's not actually possible for us to watch Bangladesh, for me to watch Bangladesh play. And I'm guessing it's the same for Krish in India. Allow it, man. Why are you talking to us about football? You know what you're doing, pussy.
Step into our cricket arena and then we'll see who's playing ball.
Yeah. How Nigeria doing in cricket, Playboy? Come on.
Boy.
I wonder if Nigeria have a cricket team. Let me find out.
Nigeria
cricket team. Yo, they've actually got one. Mad.
It's always a weird one with, like, whenever I think about kind of like Indian football, it's just mad because I always think, like, if we had one British Asian Indian born footballer, like, I would get my Indian passport as soon as possible because the endorsement deals would be through the roof.
Bro, I just know, Sunil Chetri, was it Chetri? That is,
he's still playing, you know.
Of course, he would play because he's greatest player of all time, you know what I'm saying? He's top. I think on FIFA, he might be rated like in the 70s. You got a whole team for like 50s or whatever, and I think he's actually rated in the 70s.
He's 37 years old and he's still kicking ball.
Ronaldo broke his record recently, didn't he?
I remember there was that Indian player that used to play for France.
Yeah, Vikaresh Dorasu.
He actually played for the France national team. He actually got in. This Chetri guy doesn't even look Indian. What the hell is this?
Anyway, back to Liverpool.
Who is this fraud, man? Yeah, Indian.
It's like when you see like certain nations and they've got like a Brazilian who they've naturalized.
Yeah.
I always find that really.
He's Qatari or something.
There's definitely going to be one in the Qatari team, isn't it?
Yo, like the Qatar World Cup. Just watch how many of them, man, are not Qatari.
Facts.
That's going to be interesting, but... But yeah, man, I mean, fantastic win against Arsenal, as per usual. I mean, I think there's a mad stat that Arsenal have only lost so many goals over 4-0, and I think 60% of them have been to Liverpool, and they've been in the past kind of like 10 years. So it's always a nice thing to kind of know it's going to be not a comfortable ride, but it's going to be a guaranteed 3 points when we play them.
Yeah, there are bitches, man. There are bitches. It's mad how badly they've fallen off. We're not even gassing when we say it. They've literally fallen off. Like, the quality of Arsenal is, beyond repair at this point. I don't really know. I don't know when they start challenging Liverpool and be like equal age mates again. It's been a bit mad for the past 6 years.
Yeah. Of course, got the game against Porto. Hopefully we see how that goes. But yeah, it'll be a bit of a mixed bag, I think. But as long as we kind of get players a bit up to firing speed, a few pleasant surprises in there too. I'm hoping that Origi can, you know, really start to get going as well because he's been quite impressive this season. Same again with Minamino. And of course, we have Southampton at the weekend where we will do our usual weekend preview and our post-match show over on our Patreon page. So to subscribe and get access to that, head over to www.patreon.com/copandfracas and sign up for as little as £3 a month today. That's all we've got time for this week. Thank you very much for tuning in this week. I've been your host, Chris. I've been joined by Fahy and Peter. Hopefully, we will see you later on this week for the Patreon content. If not, we will see you next Wednesday with yet another jam-packed episode of Cap and Fracas. Until then, stay safe, stay sound, and we'll see you soon.
I'm just too hot to handle in the matter of rap. The elements are relevant, it's not to attract. I'm bumping up, run the shop, take it to the top, but still lay back as I fake the crap. I tap the bottle and twist the cap. I bring the essence of lessons to fight your whack. I'm majestic, you can't test this. With the skills I got, yo, I should be arrested.
1, 2, 3, 4, get four. Rid of the kid. Can I get a chicks get a with it? Can I get a four. Fellas, you know. Can I get a fellas, you know, I'll be on the show.
Four.
Sports Social Podcast Network.